Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Anybody tell you that I miss practice?
I made my mistakes.
If a coach say I miss practice,
whatever it is, it's not right on a teleprompter.
And y'all hear it, then that's that.
Don't you feel like that creates tension between East and West?
Yeah, I can't read it. There's no words on it.
People have got to know whether or not their president's a crook.
There's no words there.
Well, I'm not a crook.
What does that mean, to play us out?
I mean, I might have missed one practice this year.
What is... I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean?
Not a game. We talking about practice.
Welcome, everybody, to the Same Old Clippers podcast. This is Lewis Keene and your co-host, Robert Flom. Flom, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. Excited for the weekend. How are you doing?
You sound excited for the weekend.
I'm dead tired from... It's been a long week. I'm writing this... I do career services for my full-time job. I'm writing the CV for this lady, and it's going to be like 5 or 6 pages long. It's sapping the life out of me.
Nice. Yeah, that's important work.
It is. It does. It makes me feel good sometimes, which is, you know, all you can ask for.
All of us should have 5 to 6 page CVs. I'm still at the phase of my life where I'm applying for jobs that only want a 1-page resume, you know? And it's like, well, what do I include? What do I leave off?
I can give you tips if you want.
Well, should I include that I had a radio show in college at this point in my life? Probably not.
Unless you're applying for a job in radio or with audio production.
There you go. But maybe leave the title of that show off.
Probably.
It was, yeah.
Anyway.
Say what it was called. But an eventful week in Clipper Nation. I think both good and bad things have surfaced. Main good thing, Kawhi's play of late has been pretty spectacular. They've also endured a couple of major injuries. I would say one major injury and a couple of losses. So we start by talking about those losses. They lost to the Nuggets at this point, probably 10 days ago, in a game that was pretty close. I thought the Clippers were going to win, but it's hard to beat Denver on their home floor. What did you make of that game?
Yeah, that was one of the losses this year where I feel like there weren't that many. I think there was some controversy about it. So there were some Clippers fans who were upset about something. I mean, there are always fans who are upset about something. It was probably something like Zubats not playing enough minutes or whatever, you know, classic Clipper fans this year. But, I mean, yeah, Denver is good. I mean, I think they're a team the Clippers should beat in the playoffs if they play in a series because they have – just a better, more complete team, and the Nuggets don't have guys who can guard Kawhi and Paul George for extended stretches. But I mean, they're still really good. Like, they're going to win over 55 games. And as you mentioned, I mean, Denver is a notoriously tough place to play because of the altitude. The Nuggets are adjusted up there. Nobody else really is except for the Jazz. And I mean, it's a loss on the road to a really good team in a tough atmosphere. And it was close. I mean, you know, It would have been a really nice win to have, but I don't remember being too upset about it. I mean, the Nuggets are good.
Yeah, I think, and this is a recurring theme of this podcast, but we talk a lot about like regular season games that, you know, we don't really care about. You know, it's like, yeah they lost, but there weren't any matchup problems that revealed themselves that, you know, that need to be addressed. The main takeaway from that game is Nikola Jokic is really good, contrary to popular belief in the first month of the season or so. He's really good. And the pick and roll with Murray and Jokic was what spelled the Clippers' doom that night.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's actually really funny because you don't think of Jokic as being one of those guys you need to see in person, because you always think of like those super athletic guys like prime LeBron or prime Westbrook, or, you know, or even really skillful guys like prime Steph Curry. But Jokic is a guy, when I think you watch him in person, you see how good he is and how he kind of commands the court. Like he runs their entire offense. Like, I know Jamal Murray is good. He's a solid point guard, but the offense doesn't work without Jokic. He does everything for them. He's also a great rebounder, and he is an underrated defender. I mean, nobody's confusing him for, like, you know, prime Hakeem Olajuwon or anything, but, you know, he can move okay out there, and the rebounding is huge. Like, a lot of defense is getting the rebound and not letting your opponent have a second chance, and he's a fantastic rebounder. Yeah, he's super good. I think he was the best player on the court that night. Though Kawhi was pretty good that game. But yeah, I mean, I completely agree. Like, I think Nuggets people were talking on Twitter about how, like, Jeremy Grant looked like he could stop Kawhi Leonard. Like, I like Jeremy Grant. He's a good player. I mean, I'm very confident that Kawhi can score on him over the course of a 7-game series.
Yeah, I also like Jeremy Grant. And Mason Plumlee has also fit in really well with that team. That's an interesting trade that's kind of shaped the Northwest Division over the last few years, which is Nurk for Plumlee.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun that the Nuggets are able to preserve their identity when they go to the bench. Obviously, no one is going to confuse Plumlee for Nikola Jokic, but his ability to pass, move the ball, be a good role man, kind of keeps the fun going in a way that's different. That, you know, it's different from the Clippers. The Clippers bring Harrell and Lou Williams off the bench, and the team kind of like flips a coin. They're completely different. You know, they're a different team when those guys are running the show versus when the starters are in. I just think that's interesting. Kind of a, I don't know, aside.
Yeah.
Then they lost to the Hawks in a game that many people, and maybe I'm projecting here, only saw the first half of because the Zion Williamson debut was started when the third quarter of that game started. So as far as I know, the Clippers are still up by 21 points. no, but it turns out they lost. So John Collins had 33. The Clippers kind of just disappeared defensively at the beginning of the third quarter. You know,
I think, you know, I understand why people are upset about this. Like, the Hawks suck. They're really bad. They stink. And they don't have Trae Young, who's their best player by, like, a gajillion miles. Like, they're really bad. Like, the Hawks with Trae Young are one of the five worst teams in the NBA. The Hawks without Trae Young are by far the worst team in the NBA. That being said, the Clippers were on the second night of a back-to-back. They were on the road, and they're missing three of their five best players, including their two best players, by a huge amount.
And they were in Atlanta.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. I mean, exactly.
It's a very difficult city to play in. And they had the, you know, they had the mayor of Louisville showing them around. So it's definitely there. I'm sure there were definite challenges to the team's
performance,
hydration the next day.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just really – it's similar to the Nuggets game in some cases where it's like I didn't see anything in that game that makes me worried about a long-term issue or anything. It's just like they got tired, they fell asleep, you know, and then they just started missing shots and they lost. Like, it was a bad loss. It was kind of embarrassing to watch. But it's not anything that, like, I really think much can be taken away from. I mean, I think, you know, one of the takeaways maybe is that, you know, they're actually a little thinner at guard than we might have thought. Like, you know, Rodney Magruder has not been good this year. People thought that would be a pretty safe bet just for a 10th man, and he's been, you know, anywhere from just mildly invisible to actively bad for most of this year. And Jerome Robinson, while I think has been better lately, is certainly not somebody that I would want to play in a playoff game under basically any circumstances. So, yeah, I mean, I think there are moves to be made out there, but I don't think any of them are that bad. Like, when the Clippers start playing Kawhi and Paul George 35 minutes a game in the playoffs, neither of those guys would be getting minutes anyway. Like, I don't know.
But they will. You know, if this team goes into the playoffs as presently constructed, Rodney Magruder's going to get playoff minutes. He's not, I mean, Kawhi and Paul George sitting or playing 35 minutes or even 38 minutes, Magruder will get in the game. Like, Doc will play him because that's the kind of coach that Doc is.
But, I mean, I think Magruder is, like, I mean, if he plays for, like, 6 minutes a game or even 8 or 10, whatever, like, I mean, I think that's manageable. Playing him 30 is very different than playing him 10. I don't know. I mean, I just – it's hard for me to get too worked up about it. I mean, I feel like I've been the calm one all year regarding the Clippers, which is really weird because usually I'm, like, king pessimist. I don't know, like – They had a bad loss. Like, these losses happen.
They haven't been great.
No. But,
you know, I think the one thing that they've revealed in aggregate is the Clippers' depth going into the season was thought of as their strong suit. And it really just does not seem to be that way at all.
I agree with that.
Like, people thought, oh, Rodney Magruder, like, that guy was a starter on the Heat last year, and you know what? He's going to be like our 10th or 11th guy. It's not like anyone thought Jerome Robinson was going to be playing this much, but here he is. And Landry Shamet, like, that was an incredible shooter last year. He was in our starting lineup. He's coming off the bench. And as it turns out, when you move these guys around to different roles in the team or ask them to do different things or pair them with different players, they're not the same guy anymore. You can't just plug them in and – That's just not how the game works. Yeah. And so as they approach the trade deadline, it's not like they have this surfeit of guys who can cook that they can move. The Nuggets are talking about trading Malik Beasley. You know, they have another guy, Monte Morris, who can do a lot of the things that Malik Beasley can do. The Clippers don't have that depth that they can move. And so, you know, they talk about, Lou Williams, who can they get? Or Montrezl Harrell, who can they get? I'm sorry, but those guys are the two guys that actually do know what they're doing when they're out there. There's nobody out there you can get, in my view, that will be able to provide something greater than what you would be taking away by subtracting one of those.
I mean, I think there are theoretical trades out there, but I don't think they're going to happen. I mean, I think I'm in favor of a smaller move, and I always have been. I don't think this team needs a big shakeup. I think it needs, like, some moves along the margins. You know, they could use a third-string center who's an actual big man who, you know, Doc Rivers might be willing to play if he really doesn't trust Ivica Zubats in big minutes. You know, as much as I love Derek Walton, they could use another ball handler with a little bit more offensive juice, you know. Neither of these, I think, are, like, pressing urges in that I think the Clippers might not win a championship without them, but I think it would make their road in the playoffs a lot easier. You know, I think the roster they have is a championship-level roster. I think the record proves that. The advanced metrics prove that. I mean, their rating with Lou Williams, Kawhi, and Paul George on the court together is ridiculous. When they put their best players on the court, they've been phenomenal this year.
Yeah.
The problem is they've been injured. And, you know, they haven't been able to build up any rhythm, and that's really hurt them. But, I mean, I think, again, going back to your point at the beginning, which is that Kawhi looks incredible. And Lou Williams, after a pretty down December, has looked better in January. I think he's had a couple rough games where shots haven't fallen, but I think he's just looked more put together and has gone to his spots a little bit cleaner than he did last month. And I think Landry Shamet has been sneakily probably the biggest reason for the Clippers' struggles this year, between him getting injured and then him just being bad for a lot of the time when he has been playing. Like, he's been bad on defense. He hasn't made that many shots on offense, and he hasn't done anything else. And part of the reason why the Clippers have looked better over the past few games, outside of, you know, the horrid loss to the Hawks, is that he was finally hitting threes and doing at least a little bit of stuff off the dribble. And if he can play better now that maybe he's accustomed to a bench role or is finally healthy or whatever, you know, that could really help the Clippers a lot, because as you said, I mean, a lot of the depth hasn't been there, and Shamet was thought to be a key piece, and he has not been good this year, or hasn't been on the court. So I'm still not really.
I think his trade value would still be extremely high, but again, that they can't move.
Yeah, I mean, it should be high, because last year he had like one of the best 3-point shooting seasons ever for a rookie. Yeah. I mean, and he showed he could be playable on defense and have like at least ancillary skills that are decent. But I don't know. I'm in favor of a smaller move. Like, I think there are things that they can do to tweak the roster to make it better. But I think the core is there. Like, I think they have what it takes. I think they just need to get healthy. And they need Paul George and Kawhi Leonard to be on the court for extended stretches. And to a much lesser extent, Patrick Beverley, at least in the Hawks game. You know, obviously not nearly in the same realm as those guys, but like the rebounding is huge.
Okay, so the other thing that I'm going to bring up is because these losses don't occur, you know, in a vacuum and then are immediately forgotten about. They just appear on a ledger. The players do experience the losses. That, you know, no one likes to lose, and some people are better at concealing that more than others. And I think in general, no one likes to bring this stuff up. But after that Hawks game, when Montrezl Harrell, not Hawks game, the Grizzlies game, when Montrezl Harrell kind of lit into the team and said that he wasn't even sure if the locker room was fully, you know, cognizant of how poorly they had been playing and really cared. On the heels of that, the Athletic today, our man Jovan Buha and Sam Amick posted an article about Kawhi's, well, just about the Clippers locker room in general, and whether there's any discontent there. Not just lingering from the Memphis game, but just towards the overall managerial strategy that the franchise has taken towards its newest star players, Paul George and Kawhi. Did you read the article?
Yeah, I did.
So I'm gonna read one paragraph from the article that I think represents the thesis of it. Here, let me screenshot it on my phone, and you can tell me, agree, disagree, you can give me a take. Okay. From the frustrations relating to, here it is. The transition from the team's overachieving past to its promising present has not been seamless. From the frustrations relating to Leonard's injury management and his quiet ways to the different views regarding regular season competition, to the reality that their chosen style of play isn't always conducive to collective joy, there are issues tugging at this talented team that will need to be resolved by the time the playoffs come around. So, big takeaways from this article. Kawhi's injury management / load management / just not playing because I don't feel like it is apparently wearing on some of the members of the team, particularly because the communication has been poor.
Yeah.
And the team's offense is no longer as egalitarian as it once was. That's kind of in between the lines here. Because they say collective joy. Nothing more joyous than egalitarianism, Rob. the different views regarding regular season competition, which is, you know, how much do we care about these games? Can we just coast? And then the argument is that these need to be resolved by the time the playoffs come around. Agree or disagree?
I'm going to say I disagree. I don't think those are issues that have to be resolved. I think the team could be playing with a lot more joy. And I think, you know, it's something we've talked about a lot is that this team hasn't been particularly fun. And I think resolving these issues could solve that. But I don't think resolving those issues will necessarily make them a better team. It might make them a more fun team. It might make them I guess it could make them more enjoyable and maybe a little bit smoother offensively, I guess, but I don't think that's really a detriment to their championship winning. I think it's just stuff that they need to be open about and discuss and just kind of not even resolve, but just agree to, like, you know, agree to disagree or just settle on a course of action. You know, like, I think the players, you know, it's something we've seen time and again is that people just don't understand this Kawhi Leonard injury thing. Players, media, fans, people just don't understand that this is like a degenerative issue that, like, if he doesn't play on it, like, if he plays on it too much, it could get a lot worse and it could maybe, you know, be career ending or career shortening or whatever. And I don't know if that's been communicated clearly. I don't know, you know, if players maybe just disagree or they feel like they have their own issues that aren't being treated as importantly, whatever it is. But no, I disagree with that.
Okay. I mean, I think that's fair. The way you're talking about it right now sounds a lot like the San Antonio Spurs, where the team is like, look, obviously he's injured, but the communication has been so poor that, like, don't we have a right to know? And the article mentions one point during his time in Toronto where he basically did not RSVP to a game until an hour before the tip or whatever, that he just, I'm not going to do this one, folks. You know, so even you're saying his knee injury is degenerative. I've read some places say that. I've read some places say that that it's not actually that bad. And if it were degenerative, wouldn't the guys on the team be like, it is what it is? Like Paul George. And then on the other hand, it seems now like they rushed Paul George back from his hamstring injury because they were kind of going through a rough stretch. Mm-hmm. And now he's like on the shelf for an extended period. It does not look good with his hamstring. So the Clippers have had training issues with their training staff going back to my childhood, Rob.
And Jason Powell still here, yeah. Still repping.
Yeah, the sweater vest. Since the sweater vest
made its debut.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think there are real issues there, but I don't think, you know, I think it's different than, say, Lob City, which is still like one of those things where, like, to some extent, I think it's probably overstated about like how they hated each other, but they had like legitimate chemistry issues one way or another. Like,
no, absolutely. And yeah. I haven't even been thinking about comparing this team to that because that was toxic on another level.
Right.
Because there, the resentment was between stars. Here, it's between the stars and the so-called others. And I was just listening to this Danny Green, Zach Lowe podcast where they're talking about how there's LeBron AD and there's the others, like drawing up a play for one of the others. And Danny Green was like, it's fine with me. Like, everyone knows who we are, you know, it is what it is. And on the other hand, the Clippers are like, you know, all one team. It isn't as clearly defined. Like, I think I wrote about this in this week's Unstatable, but Kawhi and Paul George normally would have the corner locker in their NBA locker room. In the Clipper locker room, Kawhi and Paul George are in the middle of the semicircle, and then the corner lockers are Pat Beverly,
Beverly.
And Lou Williams.
Yeah.
It seems to me not so much that this could threaten their championship because you don't know until it's something that can only really be determined in hindsight. But one thing that it does look like is that a guy like Montrezl Harrell, who does care about these regular season games, would not like to be on this team for that much longer.
Well, I think it's really Harrell. I think when it's others, I think it's Montrezl Harrell. One way or another. I don't think Lou Williams is the type of player who would challenge Kawhi or Paul George like that. And I don't think it would be Patrick Beverley either. And to be quite frank, when they say others, I don't think anybody else on the team seems important enough to make that big a fuss like that. Because it's like a three-tiered thing, right? It's Kawhi and PG, and then it's Lou, Trez, and Beverly, and then it's everybody else. So it seems like Mo Harkless, according to this article, has kind of been taken into that second tier, because it seems like the top guys respect him a lot. I mean, I think it also, part of the other article outside of the Kawhi stuff was about how Trez had that blow up, as you mentioned, after the Grizz game, and how that there were teammates who were unhappy with him because they feel like he only cares about stats. And I feel like Trez is, you know, he's also been a guy who's kind of been on the court part of the Clippers' issues because he's been so bad defensively. And some of it is due to physical limitations and just due to, like, him just not being a good defender. Like, I think one of the biggest misconceptions about defense is that it's all about effort. You know, it's a lot about instinct and talent and positioning. And Montrezl Harrell is just not, like, he just doesn't know where to be on the court. Like, he blows rotations all the time. He's out of position. And it's not really an effort thing. And it's also just he's small. He's not, like, a big guy who can dominate around the rim. But, you know, I thought it was interesting. He was the person calling everybody out. I do think he always plays with energy, or almost always. And that's something that maybe not everybody else does. But I think, you know, there could be a sense there that he gives up a lot of points, even if he scores a lot as well. And that can rub both ways in terms of him calling people out and other people being like, well, like, you know, maybe if you were better on defense, we'd be able to hold on to some of these leads or whatever. Again, that's entirely my thinking, not anything even in the article. But I think if there's conflict, I think it would be between Trez and PG and Kawhi.
Well, I mean, there's clearly more than just Trez speaking out on this, because the article, I don't think it would have run if it was just Montrez that was upset about it.
I agree.
Like, Jovan's, like, in the lead, it says that interviews with over a dozen sources. That's a lot. Now, what each of those people said or who they were, you know, who knows? But I think it is more than Trez. And as to your point about his defense not being that good, you know, we talked just now about two losses that may have occurred in part because Montrez could not contain, let's say, John Collins or Jokic. But, you know, when I was in high school baseball and the first team all league catcher and team MVP, Rob.
Yep.
that's the whole story. Our coach would sit us down after the game, and he would just review the good things and bad things that we did. And he always set, like, the only thing he ever would criticize us for was mental mistakes. So You can't really blame Montrezl Harrell for being a bad defender anymore. You could defend Lou Williams for being a bad defender. These are just, like you said, it's not just effort. It's being good at it. It's lateral mobility. It's quick hands. It's a bunch of stuff. And Montrezl Harrell, he's leading the NBA in charges. Like, he is putting his body out on the line for defense, you know, one way or another. Yeah, that's my statement on that. And how do you see this article playing out? I know Pat Beverley has already come out and said fake news, which, honestly, I'm going to just skip ahead. This is my disrespect of the week. I disrespect anyone who calls newspaper reporting or just serious journalism fake news. It just It's so lazy, and the frustration is also coming from a place where this team is really hard to access. They're not opening this team to the media at all. The lead of this article is Montrezl Harrell being reamed out for talking to the press. I'm sorry, I'm a fan of the game. I report on the team, and whatever little I can get, I will put in the story. Pat Beverly himself, in his last media availability, gave one-word answers. So I don't abide someone just dismissing a whole article as fake news.
I agree with that very strongly. Yeah. And I think actually Joe Varden, also The Athletic, had that was another very long article a couple of days ago. But one of the things buried way down, which was super interesting, is that how a lot of NBA teams have cut out, I don't know if you read this, have cut out shoot-arounds and additional practices this year to reduce wear and tear. But those are also media availabilities. And it's reduced the amount of time that reporters are getting with players. And it's why reporting has kind of been down this year, is because just shoot-arounds and practices are way down. And, you know, it means a lot less space time, and that teams are apparently supposed to be making up that time with player availability before games, but a lot of them choose not to appear before games. They almost never do. And if they do, it's not for anything serious. Like, maybe you'll just hear them joking around. Like, they'll be there, but, like, you're not going to be, like, talk to us about actual basketball stuff.
And this is part of, the false dichotomy between the Lakers and the Clippers, because driving around LA today, driving through Hollywood, I saw this billboard for the Lakers that was like representing the city of stars, you know, and the Lakers are happy to play into glam if the Clippers are playing up their grit, but it's a false dichotomy. These guys are these are celebrity athletes, you know. The Clippers are not this, you know, accessible fan friendly team. Except to the extent that they sign autographs, and it's just like, that's such a, that's another thing I don't respect, is the professional journalists and media who run with that narrative as like, this is like gritty or whatever.
I don't think this team has been gritty this year at all.
It's a normal collar, find a new slant, you know?
No, I agree. I agree with that disrespect. Patrick Patterson also said that on Instagram. And Lou Williams tweeted an hour ago. He quote tweeted the Athletic NBA, link to it. And he said, out your source, put address on it. Which, you know, I think stories are stronger when they have names to them rather than sources. I think, you know, but most times, especially in sports, you don't have somebody willing to speak on the record about stuff like this. Like, that's just not going to happen.
Someone did speak on the record. Well, Montrezl Harrell, right?
And then he got called out for it.
And he got killed for it. So,
exactly.
Out your source. Well, that's not unfortunately, because the players aren't made available. This is the best that we can do.
Yeah.
You know. And it is what it is. So and also I resent the idea that this is like some kind of distraction for the locker room. Either the issue is there or it isn't. If it's fake news, then they have nothing to worry about. And if it's real, then they have something to worry about, and it's not the newspaper. So
I mean, I think, you know, this is where it comes down to, you mentioned serious journalism, not to get all like snobby, but you know, there's a very huge difference between, you know, somebody at like an aggregator site taking a quote out of proportion and creating some stupid article, and like a very long, pretty thoroughly sourced article between probably the Clippers' most well-known beat writer and Sam Amick, who's probably, I'd say, like one of the top five guys in terms of at least sources, I'd say, around the NBA. And breaking news, like I'd say on trade deadline stuff, he's usually the third guy behind Woj and Shams. And Jovan is certainly, you know, I'm not going to compare like who's better or best, but I'd say in terms of who interacts, of any of the beat guys, he interacts the most with fans on, you know, Twitter, and he's the most active in terms of like, you know, generating like very specific and in-depth Clippers content. Though certainly, I mean, I think that, you know, the Clippers have a good beat and, you know, but I mean, he's the guy, and he's also been around the longest. Like, he was at Clipper Blog for years before moving to ESPN and then The Athletic. So he has like deep roots with the team. So, I mean, I think the idea that like this was some like stupid article like thrown together, you know, randomly is just really off base as well. So I agree.
Yeah. It's the player's job on a certain level to be like, the story, it's not true. Like, everything's fine here, whatever. It's their job to say that, but to impugn the integrity of the reporter by saying fake news is no bueno. No bueno.
Yeah.
Anyway, I
don't think it's that big an issue, to be quite honest. You know, I think the general gist of the article is that there are issues, and that the issues are born because of really, like you've talked about all year, because of like the lack of chemistry built through injuries and lack of reps on the court and how that's affected things off the court. And it's not, again, like Lob City, which was a truly toxic atmosphere, where here, like, these guys are still enjoying hanging out together. And, you know, I don't think there's any dislike there. I think there's just, you know, there's some things they need to work out, and there are things they need to be communicative about. But anyway, something that's Clippers related is that the All-Star starters were announced today, and Kawhi Leonard is an All-Star starter. I didn't see you. You might have had tweets about this. Do you have any takes about the All-Star game and like the voting or anything like that?
My take is that Lou Williams should be an All-Star, but because the current system does not accommodate cool players that come off the bench like Lou Williams, I believe that there should be an undercard game, not made up of bench players per se, but made up of like the second tier guys that like haven't made it, just as a way to introduce them to NBA fans. A guy like Chris Middleton, who made it last year. Did he make it this year? He's having a great season.
I mean, it was just the starters day. He's going to make
it. Oh, just the starters. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to get voted in. Yeah.
So guys like that may not have a national profile but are fun to watch, or are just good but not one of the household names yet, I would love to see an undercard game before the All-Star game. You know, just make it a six-hour thing. Get the undercard game, which, in my opinion, would be more which I think would be more competitive, because, you know, it's not just guys collecting checks. It's guys trying to make an impression. And then you have the second game, which would have to live up to how good the first game was, and then could be more competitive in that way. My take on the All-Star game is it's a fun game. It's an exhibition game. All the concern trolling about it is, I think, is silly. And it's just a result of how much like stock we put into it. The only fair concern about the All-Star game is when people are like, I want to see this guy. Not when it's this guy deserves it. That's my.
Yeah. I mean, I always am amazed by, you know, some of the stuff that people think about who, you know, again, who they want to see versus who they deserve it. Like, you know, if you really want to see Zach LaVine play, you know, like, sure. Like, he's super fun to watch. If you think he's, like, a better player than, like, Kyrie Irving, I mean, I don't think Zach LaVine is fun to watch. I can see why people think he's fun to watch. If you think he's better than, like, Kemba Walker, I don't know why I said Kyrie Irving, better than Kemba Walker or, you know, Chris Middleton, like, he's not. Like, he just isn't. Like, if you'd rather watch him, that's fine. But, you know, and again, like, I think the All-Star game is something that, like, is trying to be two things at once, right? It's trying to be this prestigious thing for the NBA's best, and it's also trying to be fun. And I think you can be both. But right now, it's failing at kind of both, but certainly at the fun aspect. And, you know, this is where I think All-NBA is really what should be the premier in terms of, like, this is who the actual best players are. And I think it serves that purpose very well. And the NBA should just lean into the ridiculous aspect of All-Star Weekend and just forget about, you know, its importance, quote unquote.
My other All-Star take is that I should get to play.
And the celebrity game.
Celebrity game, main event, dunk contest. Put me in, man. Put me in. Three point. They don't want me in that. They don't want me embarrassing Davis Bertans and whoever. Who's going to make it this year? Do you think Marcus Morris? Do you think they'll put him in the 3-point
shooting? No. It's going to be.
Chris Middleton will be in there.
It's going to be him. It's going to be Bertans. It's going to be Duncan Robinson.
You think George Hill?
No.
I think he's leading the NBA, isn't he?
He might be, but it's not going to be him. It's going to be Duncan Robinson. It's going to be – honestly, it might have been Paul George if he hadn't gotten injured. But he sucked last year, so I don't know.
You should put Bogdanovich in there.
Bogey.
One of them.
Either both.
Fuck it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
Here's my other take. The dunk contest participants should not be announced until the day of. I think it should be a surprise.
That would be sick. I mean, I don't think that would happen in the social media age, but that would be dope. I'm fully behind that.
Because it's not like I already know now that Derek Jones Jr. is going to be in it, and it's already like, I'd like it to be announced the day of, because that way you could get a lot of players to say, oh, we'll do it live. You know, like LeBron's like, fuck it. They haven't announced it yet, right? All right. Shit, I'll do it. I can do a couple dunks, you know? And then you also get guys like backing out because they're hungover, you know? They're like, all right, I need someone to stand in for me. All right.
JaVale McGee.
JaVale, you're up, man. I like the spontaneity aspect of things. I think in general the failure of the All-Star break, you know, it's always getting people to care, and their solution to that has just been paying people more money. But I'd like to see some kind of a new strategic outlook that emphasizes getting people to care.
Yeah.
Because they enjoy playing basketball. And like, why did Chris Brickley's hoodie mellow games over the summer, why does he get like fun one-on-one games there that they can't get in the All-Star game?
I don't know. I don't have too much else on the All-Star game. Cool that
Kawhi. One last thing on the All-Star. LaMarcus Aldridge should be one.
Yeah. Well, this was really going to be the entire point of the pod. Just an hour talking about LaMarcus Aldridge. LaMarcus Aldridge, it's one of those things where, like, I feel like I'm just different in how I watch basketball than maybe a lot of people, because I love watching LaMarcus Aldridge. So many people are like, oh, like, he's boring to watch or whatever. I could watch LaMarcus Aldridge settle in on the elbow or from the baseline and just start backing people down or holding the ball over his head and taking 16-foot jumpers until – for like the next 20 years.
I think also, so first of all, he started shooting threes recently and he's making them. Last night he was a monster against the Pelicans, who actually employ Derek Favors, who is a very good post defender, who's like seemingly ideally suited to guarding a guy like LaMarcus, because he can, you know, size up with him, and you know, they kind of look alike. LaMarcus tortured his ass. So first of all, he has been shooting threes. Second of all, I think in a way, so the Spurs used to be a team that everyone hated.
Yeah.
Right. When you and I were kids, people hated the Spurs because they were anti-Lakers and because they were gray, but also because they had this like defensive identity. They were really boring or whatever. And then team basketball, gross. And then the league and the fans kind of grew into the Spurs and into enjoying them.
partly because they changed, the Spurs did, by embracing more D'Antoni ball. But also because the fans just came to appreciate it. I think public opinion on Twitter helped sway that in a way that we see, you know, the public opinion has swayed on Vince Carter in the Twitter age. And I think it will sway on LaMarcus in the same way that it swayed with the Spurs, where you have a league that's full of three-point shooters now. You have all these 3-and-D guys. LaMarcus is the anti-3-and-D guy. And people would say, oh, yeah, Robert Covington, more valuable to your team than LaMarcus because he can shoot threes, he can play defense. And LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, on some level, he can play defense on the interior. On some level, he can shoot threes, but he's really not that guy. But his style now is such a sore thumb, if you will, that it kind of grows on you. This very stiff, upright, kind of plodding center who shoot, you know, who releases the ball over his head and, you know, takes these inefficient looking shots, but just drills them. It has grown on me. And I think he's averaging a block and a half. He's doing things. Okay. And that's my son. So he's an all-star, even if he doesn't make the team.
I don't think he'll make it this year, but he's good. I mean, he's putting up 19 and 7.5, 50% from the field, 43% from three on three attempts a game.
85% at the line.
Yeah, 1.8 blocks per game. He's good. He's been really good for over a decade. You know, he's consistently been, you know, not one of the best players in the NBA, but a really good NBA player. And there's something about that that's really cool. Like, consistency is cool. And LaMarcus Aldridge is super consistent. I'm pro LaMarcus Aldridge in general.
Before we go, this came up earlier in the podcast. It came up earlier this week with when I was talking to Sabrina Merchant, Sports Illustrated Clippers writer. Who, and you mentioned Jokic as one of the players that you got to see him in person. Who else do you have on that list off the top of your head? I came up with a few players. Also, if you have a disrespect, I'll take one. But who are players that you got to see in person? And one for your disrespect, you can tell me one player who underwhelmed you in person.
Okay, that's good. Who you should see in person, Giannis. I mean, it's the easy answer, but it's true. Like, Giannis in person is ridiculous to watch. And he's ridiculous to watch on TV too, but he's crazy in person. You know, I will say I think Harden in person is interesting because I think the way he's able to create space, when you see it live, it's like it's really crazy how much he's able to get on those step backs. He's really impressive.
Sabrina mentioned Harden.
Yeah. I mean, he's really good. But other guys you see in person. That's a tough one. I don't see as many games as I used to. I'll try to think of a third. Somebody who's underwhelmed me in person, Anthony Davis.
Do you have a story or no?
I mean, I watched him dismantle the Clippers a couple years ago when he was on the Pelicans, and it still just wasn't really that impressive to me. Like,
yeah,
he destroyed them. Like, I think he put up like 44 points or something and like 18 rebounds. Like, it was an MVP level performance, and I was still like, meh.
Yep. I have a story about that. So my friends and I, when I lived in Madison in Giannis's rookie season, and his second and third year.
Yeah.
And I went to a ton of Bucks games, and the Bucks were really bad that first year. So we were able to get really good tickets for cheap. And I couldn't always get people to go with me because driving to Milwaukee is like an hour. You know, buy tickets. It's what you're doing that night, you know.
Yeah.
But I roused enough people to see the Pelicans and Anthony Davis. This is my first time going with this group, and someone else is, you know, we make the drive, someone else is putting in the directions, and we drive, like, I want to say 45 minutes or an hour, and I'm noticing that, like, oh, I've not taken this route before. Like, it's more rural, you know, mm-hmm. we're seeing all these old, like, blown out houses, like farms that got blown down. It's like kind of cool, like creepy, beautiful, but definitely different route. At a certain point, I was like, are we like going in the right way? Are we? And then I was, and I kind of joked, like, maybe there's another BMO Harris Center or something like that. And turned out, sure enough, there's a BMO Harris box office for tickets in Rockford, Illinois. Not for Bucks, just for whatever arena or whatever they have in Rockford. So we had just driven south, southeast instead of driving east. So we got to the game, like, at the end of the first half, and we had, like, third row seats. We had, like, great seats that mm-hmm. we had paid, like, $50 for or something.
Yeah.
We're sitting right behind the Pelicans bench, and it turns out when we get there, AD's in foul trouble. So he picks up his fourth foul, like, early in the third quarter, and we end up seeing him for, like, 3 minutes. He just does not play. And so that's my LaMarcus Aldridge in-person story. Ja Morant is a name that you left off your list. That's probably my number one right now.
I mean, young guys are usually pretty fun. I'd say Luka is really fun in person.
Fultz, I saw last week.
Fultz really is really good.
Yeah. And so I have an article coming out tomorrow on Fultz where I interviewed some of his teammates. And Terrence Ross gave me such a great quote, which I was able to use maybe half of, just about, like, bouncing around in the league and, like, how you need to be traded sometimes to mm-hmm. to find an employer who will see what you can do and give you a chance to do it. I'm gonna read this quote, actually, which I just thought was – I was like, man, I feel like intimate with you having you just describe this to me. He said, here we go. I closed it. I guess you have to read the article.
Read it anyway.
It's coming out tomorrow on insidehook.com, but I'll also post it on my Twitter @thislewis. Subscribe to Unstatable, which is my weekly newsletter, if you haven't subscribed yet. Rob, do you have anything to promote?
213 Hoops should be launching sometime in the next couple weeks. It was originally going to be February 1st. I don't know if we're quite going to meet that, but it should be up sometime in early February. In the meantime, content is still coming out on Clips Nation. I don't really have anything in the pipeline. I know Lucas has been publishing a ton of trade pieces, but trade deadline stuff doesn't generally interest me as much as it does a lot of other people, except the deadline itself, which is just a flurry, and I love that.
And how far away is that?
It's coming up, I think. Yeah, I mean,
before All-Star.
It is this year, NBA trade deadline. Yeah, it's February 6th, though it's less than 2 weeks away. But yeah, I don't really have anything, you know. We'll be podding on our other pods, the Lob Jam, probably this weekend. And I'm doing a game preview for tomorrow. It's probably gonna be pretty short. no, I don't have anything exciting.
I'm looking forward to Miami.
My guy Duncan Robinson.
That's my pick coming out of the Eastern Conference right now. So.
That's right. You can watch my one of my proud Michigan sons, Duncan Robinson, shine. But no, I don't have anything.
Okay. Thanks for doing this, as always. Thanks for listening. Check us out online. Join the conversation. And see you guys after the next Clippers loss.
We talking about practice.
All right, go.
10, 5, 4, 3.
That's tomorrow, and that is a...
I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice.
I can't do it.
I mean, how silly is that?
We'll do it live.
Practice?
No. We'll do it live.
Practice?
Do it live. I'll write it, and we'll do it live.
Not the game that I go out there and die for and play every game like it's my last. Five, not the game. We're talking about practice, man.
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today. I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks again for watching. We'll leave you with Sting and a cut off his new album. Take it away.
I mean, how silly is that?